You're listening to Community Radio, CKMS Radio Waterloo, 102.7, 946 on the Rogers Digital Network.
Good morning, Waterloo Region. It is Monday, the 19th of October, 2020. Today, we're interviewing Jeremy Genoux, fiddle player or violinist. We'll find out during the show. This is Jeremy playing Extension Chord from the Sin Acoustic album. That's Jeremy Genoux playing extension chord on, I think that was the fiddle. Good morning, Jeremy. How are you?
Good morning, Bob. I'm well. How are you?
I'm quite well, thank you. Extension chord is a song that doesn't seem to be able to make up its mind as to whether it's a fast song, a slow song, a happy song, a sad song, danceable or not. What's the story behind it?
The story behind it? So the main theme, it's inspired by Romanian traditional Romanian tunes with the trills and the drive, and then that main theme kind of like sat for a while untouched, and then I didn't know what to do with it, and then I decided maybe I could make a song about not knowing what I want to do with it, and it goes bluegrass, it goes sort of a weird waltz, goes a little bit in different directions, and that's actually one of the feedbacks I've had from friends is that they like the song, but mm-hmm. they wish that it maybe made up its mind a little better. it's a fun song to play live, especially and I didn't know if it would make it in the recorded, but I thought it still worked out all right, even on the record. So
yeah, it does sound pretty good. It's something that I've enjoyed playing on the radio, at any rate.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah. So you're in Calgary, called all the way out to Calgary, and there you are.
Yes.
Been out in Calgary long?
I've been here for 5 years now. Mm. So yeah, when I moved to Canada, and actually that was 9 years ago. I came to Calgary first, and then went to Montreal for 3 years to study composition, and came back here. In the meantime, I had met my wife in Calgary, so that was a big reason for us to come back here.
Absolutely. So you studied composition. How do you learn composition? Isn't that just all the creative muse striking you, and that's the end of it?
So actually, no. It's really much the technical aspect of writing music. I mean, it's inspired. It's mainly like, you know, classical music, a little bit of jazz. So it's pretty much learning to have two notes, two melodic lines go together and be both nice to hear, nice to play, and also nice to play together. And then when you have two melodic lines, then you learn to have three at the same time, and then four, and and so that's and, you know, learning about harmony and orchestration, that kind of stuff. That's a lot of the technical aspect of writing, primarily classical music, but it's applicable to lots of styles.
So two musical lines interweaving amongst each other, you know, that makes composition twice as hard as I thought it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a puzzle. It's there's different. I mean, there's a creative aspect of it, obviously, mm-hmm. but there's a very technical aspect of it as well. That's very fun. It's kind of like art and mathematics combined together, in a way. I mean, it's not as mathematic as pure math.
There's a number of people who have mentioned that, you know, mathematics. Had a gentleman in, David Marskell from our local museum, the museum, who said that in the STEAM program, the science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, you know, you always have people together in the engineering and math field, and, you know, there's always musicians amongst them too. So music is very mathematical.
Yes, and something interesting to know is that in the ancient Greek and ancient Egyptian times, when you had a math book, like a textbook, mm-hmm. It usually had four main parts in it. There was arithmetic, so the science of numbers. Mm-hmm. There was geometry, the shapes. There was always something about astronomy, the science of stars, and there was also music theory. That was a part of mathematics, and guys like Pythagoras did a lot for establishing the frequencies of the scale and what that meant. Like there's relationship between notes that are very much like relationships between numbers, between fractions.
Yeah. I remember reading something about Pythagoras walking along past a blacksmith shop and listening to the blacksmiths hit the anvils with their hammers. And sometimes it sounded nice, and sometimes it didn't sound so nice, and he wanted to find out why the difference, and it had to do with the frequencies that the anvils resonated at.
Yeah. And you can measure that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you do when you have a string for a guitar or violin. The way you make the string, like the material you use, the length of it, everything is computed so that it's going to make the frequencies and the tone you're looking for. And so there's something very very scientific, very 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 technical about music.
Yeah. And when you're composing, do you break out the calculator to figure out what you need to do?
No, not so much. But I there's always like kind of like an artistic drive, like I try to see what I want to do, like what's my artistic purpose with that song. And usually there's going to be like a mood. There's going to be a main theme, and then after that, to develop that, I'm going to look at. I mean, there's different ways to go, but like one way to go is to look at the main melody and break it down into like little motives and little movements, and be like, okay, what if I take this little motif, and maybe develop it? Like maybe I can start a new melody from that little motif. And then it's going to sound familiar because it's going to use something right from the main theme. But it's also going to be new because I'm going to I retake a bone from the first theme and then build a new theme from that. Right. So that's one of the things you learn in school for composition, and there's something. Yeah, pretty. You try things, like there's something experimental about it. Like you're gonna take one thing and try it. Maybe you'll play it on the piano and see what you can do with it. And maybe it doesn't work. You start again.
Yeah. Is it any different composing for piano than composing for violin?
You're gonna write differently, depending on what instrument you're writing for, just because things might sound better on one or the other. But I usually like to compose on the piano, even if I'm not using any piano there's absolutely no piano in that album. I like to be able to have the whole range of notes, to be able to play chords and to be able to also visualize what's going on. So the piano is great for that, for composing. But sometimes I compose on the guitar, sometimes I compose on the violin. Like it's really for something more melodic.
Okay.
I
suppose if you're composing on the piano, you can compose for the other parts that will be playing along. So if you're in a band, you've got maybe a violin, a guitar, saxophone, trumpet, who knows. But you can do all that at the same time on a piano.
That's right, yeah. Theoretically, at least, yeah. Yeah, so that's what's so useful. Like the violin, I can't do very much more than playing one thing at a time. So then it can be a little limited when you want to have an idea of what the whole thing is going to sound like.
Right. What about the different genres? You know, if you're playing something lively and upbeat, like extension chord that we just heard, or something classical and much more traditional, or something in the realm of jazz. Does your composition technique change from one genre to the next?
Yeah. If I'm writing something that's more jazz, I'm going to use things that I learned more in jazz arrangement or jazz harmony. So that's just going to be, it's a little bit of a different way to approach things. It's maybe more chordal than classical music. That's more melodic, but it all—I mean, it all those times have come on point. And then I might look for different aesthetics. I might apply different rules. Like something that works in jazz might not work in classical music just because it sounds jazz.
And so syncopation, perhaps, you know, the rhythm.
Yeah, like rhythm is a lot of things, but even like just harmony and having notes that are maybe a little odd, and you just like them for the color of them being odd. Where in classical music, you're when you have an odd note, you like the color, but you like to also like resolve it to something more consonant.
Right. So when you say resolving,
there's a lot more resolving. In classical music, where in jazz you might just leave those notes as is, because they're nice. They're odd, but they're nice.
So what does that mean, resolving music?
Well, it's when you have two notes that are tense together, that are dissonant. Uh-huh. You're going to move both of them, or just one, to an interval that's more consonant. Yeah, I don't know if that's too abstract.
I don't have much of a musical background, so, you know, it's all new to me.
Okay, I don't know if I can play on, if it's going to sound like something if I play it on the piano, on the phone.
Okay, well, give it a shot, see what happens.
But for example, this is a dissonant, something that sounds just very dissonant. And then in classical music, you're going to want to resolve that this way, for example, so that it feels more satisfying. In jazz, you might want to just keep that. Maybe you'll put a few more notes to make it a little more palatable, like, for example.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to leave it there, because it's nice. You might want to do something, but you might also want to leave it there.
So jazz is a lot more flexible in that it gives you the ability to leave music unresolved.
Yeah, I think so. I think you could say that, yeah.
Or is jazz just breaking all the rules that used to exist?
Yeah, but somehow making new ones as well. I mean, I guess, yeah. It all started with, like, you know, like in the early jazz, they played music that was very much like classical music, because that was one of the main music played around, and then they, you know, like Duke Ellington would like go on the piano and do like fine chords, new voicings, new things, new notes put together, and he created his own language that was inspired from classical music, but that had those little oddities, and that defined in a way the new colors of jazz when you hear. Amalgam of notes, you'll be like, oh yeah, this is jazz, and that's from people like Duke Ellington experimenting, and then eventually later people kind of theorize that and like, oh well, that's what he's doing, and so you have this new set of rules that are like inspired from classical music rules, but they're a little their own, and maybe a little more flexible,
and a whole genre sprung up from that.
Yeah,
my goodness. I think what we need on CKMS FM is music theory program, so that we can learn all this stuff. I've got your entire Synacoustic album on tap here, as well as a bunch of other music that I found, I think, on SoundCloud, Urban Blues, Film Noir, Train, Les Gants du Poissonnier. Is there something in your repertoire that we could use as an example of composition technique? Is there something that we could listen to get a good example of what we've just talked about?
Yeah, so there's two I can think of. There's a Technicolor that's it's very jazzy, but also really reaches to classical. And so hearing that's going to be mainly the harmonic colors, like a lot of chords. Okay. That resolves most of the time, but also sometimes leave unresolved, especially at the end. Another one, if you want to hear something that's really close to classical music, it's going to be Hope. Hope is very much inspired from classical music techniques.
Let's have a listen to Technicolor first, and I guess the title might sort of describe the color of the music. This is Technicolor, Jeremy Genoux from the Synacoustic album. Thank you. That's Jeremy Genoux, Technicolor from the Synacoustic album. And giving Jeremy and I time to grab a bit of extra coffee. Good morning, Jeremy. Welcome to CKMS Community Connections.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. That was a complex piece. There's a lot of stuff happening, both in instrumentation and in harmonics and just everything seemed to be in there. A good example of composition technique, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It moves a lot in a harmony key.
It came from your album called Synacoustic. Can you tell me about the album? Came out what, in September? Maybe a little bit earlier.
Yeah, it came out this summer. There was a weird release, as a lot of things are these days. It's a collection of songs that instrumental songs that I wrote over the past few years with this project that I sometimes call the Acoustic Ensemble. So there's a few musicians on the project on, mm-hmm. on the album. There's Jason Vallow, Wayne Garrett, and Nathan and Godfrey. It's me on violin and then guitar, resonant guitar, and a Prey bass. And there's a bit of banjo as well.
I see on the website there's one gentleman playing accordion.
Yes, so that gentleman moved to Victoria, I haven't had the chance to play much with him. Sometimes he comes back in town, and we managed to get a few gigs from that. Uh-huh. But unfortunately fortunately for him, I think he's having a great time in Victoria. There has been accordion on the song when the accordion player is around, it started with like playing some jazz manouche, music inspired from Django Reinhardt and Stefan Grappelli.
Ah, yes. Stefan Grappelli is present in your work.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the few violinists who played something else than just classical, and that inspires me. And so the music started with that, with those influences, and then and trying to find something from that, it definitely got way more folk than jazz in general. I think it's just from the people I play with the music I listen to got some banjo in there and some banjoline as well. That's
a combination of banjo and mandolin.
That's right. Yeah. So it's essentially a banjo with the drum and the twang, and but it's got the doubles, the eight strings of a mandolin. So you play it like a mandolin, but it's going to sound a bit more like a banjo.
So no drone string. The banjo has a drone string, right? It has the short string.
Yeah. So the five string banjo has a drone string, but the mandolin doesn't have that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a little closer, maybe to a tenor banjo.
Okay.
There's so many different kinds of banjo and with different repertoires too. You can't really play the same thing on those, but it is always that very interesting tone.
Is Synacoustic your first album?
It is my first album, yes. Yeah.
Does that make you primarily a live performer rather than a recording performer?
These days I'm not very much of a performer at all.
I guess you and every other musician in North America.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have one gig in November that I'm really excited for and also a little worried about. But yeah, it's these days. I'm working on my piano skills actually to maybe incorporate that in the future.
So we'll end up with another album, not primarily violin music.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows?
That'd be nice.
Yes. Yeah, something different. I definitely. I love this project and very proud of it. But I'm definitely looking to do something different. One of the player in the album, Wayne Garrett, also is a fabulous steel guitar player. Pedal steel guitar. So I would love to have him switch to that in the future and have a little bit of different sounds.
So you've got the setup there for traditional country music.
Yeah, but pedal steel is a very interesting instrument. You can really really play a lot of different things on that. We had so one of the few gigs I've had lately is during the Stampede in Calgary. We played some instrumental Western swing because there's some restrictions in Alberta for singers. They have to be behind the screen to be able to sing live, and so to avoid that problem, we just went instrumental. And he played a lot of. So much pedal steel on that, and that really got me loved the instrument even more. That was a fun gig. There was also with Jason, who plays bass, and they switched instrument the whole time during the gig. So they had the way we did it is we had a loop going. And so the bass player would play bass line and then leave it there and then switch to piano. And then the guitar player would have like a take of like a rhythm guitar, and then he would switch to the pedal steel to play some melodies. And we'd switch around like this and created a show like that didn't have any vocals, but that was certainly entertaining this way.
Yeah. And the entire album, Sin Acoustic, is instrumental music.
That's right, yeah.
Which is somewhat convenient for a radio station because we can add instrumental music to just about anything, to fill in, to do voiceovers for, to have some bed music for public service announcements. It's a very popular album in that regard.
Nice. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad it struck that chord. I personally, I'm, as much as I love listening to vocal music, I really like instrumental music in that it's really just music. Like you're not gonna like the it's not about the lyrics or anything. It's really just about the music, and that doesn't mean it can't be lyrical or melodic. As you said, technical or there's a I believe most of those songs could be sung, and that's what I try to do when I write a song is that even if I play the melody on the violin or another instrument, I mean it to be lyrical and if anything try to imitate a voice that wouldn't have any lyrics.
Yes. It says on your webpage that you're a violinist, a violist, a fiddler, composer, and bandleader. What's a violist? Violist?
Oh, a violist as a viola player.
Oh, okay.
So the viola is the big sister of the violin.
Right.
To played a lot the same. It's a bit. It's bigger and lower and deeper. So I play, I play a little bit of that. Not as much as the violin, but I really enjoy the tone. It's a very, very deep tone.
Right.
It's harder, a little harder to play because it's bigger.
Okay.
But it's really nice. I play a little bit on the album, on the Idea 6 and Hope.
Like the difference between a tenor saxophone and an alto sax, or a...
That would be the same kind of difference, yeah. Yeah. It's essentially the same instrument, but a different range.
Right.
Yeah, and so, like, bigger than the viola, you would have the cello.
And so I want to ask you, leading up to the question, are you a fiddle player or a violin player?
I was expecting that.
So I think what I'd like to do is I'd like to play from some earlier work that you did, the fiddle demo, so we can have a good idea of what fiddling sounds like. So this is the fiddle demo by Jeremy Genoux. Shave and a haircut in a fiddle demo by Jeremy Genoux. That's fun. That's a lot of fun to listen to. Is that a lot of fun to play?
Yeah, yeah. So those are all fiddle tunes. I mean, a bit everywhere from Ireland, the Appalachians. I think there was a fiddle tune from Quebec as well. Lots of fun stuff that I play often. I play by myself.
Was that done in one take, or is that a composite of many different tunes that were edited, spliced together?
Those are just little excerpts of fiddle tunes that I put together to give an idea of what I play for when I play solo fiddle.
Right. So what characterizes fiddle music? How I recognize fiddle music when I hear it, but what is it about fiddle music that makes it so distinctive?
Well, there's something. It's folk music. It's music of the people. It's tunes that are often hard to trace back. That have been played, you know, in a village for a long time, and then somebody from another village heard it and started playing their own version, and then it can go to another country and they can be like different versions of the same fiddle tune.
Yeah, so everybody knows it. Everybody knows how to play it, but nobody knows who wrote it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it might play differently too. And sometimes there's like a different version, but also sometimes of different tunes that just sound like there's something similar, but like it traces back from such a long time. It's hard to tell. Like I have a friend who actually studies fiddle music in Norway, and he was playing a Norwegian tune, and I was like, I've heard like a tune that's about 50% the same from Ireland, but like, did they just travel, you know, from Ireland to Norway, or the other way around, or is it just an accident, you know? And I guess he as a fiddle scholar would be probably able to research that, but it's very hard research because it's there's no writing until like recently, like it's all by ear,
learned by ear, and then passed down from parents to child.
Exactly.
I say parents to child, but it's probably largely from father to son, wasn't it? Fiddle playing by women is a fairly recent phenomenon, I think.
I don't really know the answer to that. I don't know.
And you said
it would be an interesting question.
Yeah, you said your Norwegian friend was a scholar of fiddle playing. So fiddling is an academic pursuit.
Well, I don't exactly know. Like maybe he studied fiddle music in a little village in Norway. So there was definitely something academic about it, and I think just like a lot of things are becoming more academic. Just like jazz now is more of a classical music because it's taught in school, and there's maybe. You know how we talked earlier how maybe jazz there's less rules and or different rules. Mm-hmm. I think there used to be less rules, and then now there's different rules because they're taught in school. And
now there are rules
maybe
for jazz.
A little bit more tightness around jazz than there was 50 years ago.
And so we're seeing that
because it's
that's happening in fiddle playing music then too. People have rules to follow for fiddling.
Definitely not as strongly. I mean, like, something interesting about fiddle music is that it's present in so many different cultures, and especially if you look at British Isles, especially Irish and Scottish music, and related to what's happening in North America, whether it's Quebec. The Appalachians or Métis music. There's a lot of common grounds between those five styles of fiddle playing, but there's also the difference. There's like you're going to play differently if you play an Irish tune than if you play an Appalachian tune from Virginia or. And even if they might be related, and so maybe it takes to really pay attention and learn properly how to do it. And I try to as much as I can to be true to the style, but I'm far from being perfect at that. Mm-hmm. I might make an Irish fiddle tune sound a bit too Quebecer, maybe, and maybe the other way around.
Are those differences due to the way that you hold the fiddle, or in your bowing technique, or is it just in the way that you express the notes?
Yeah, it's a little bit of all those things. I think the bowing technique has a lot to do. The ornamentation has a lot to do. So, like, the ornamentation is the little twinkle nose,
right,
that you play around the note, tick-de, trills and such.
Right.
Those are going to be very different from one culture to the other.
Okay.
And they kind of like relate to what an accent is when you speak.
Right.
Even if you like all those places, with the expression of Quebec, they'll speak English, but they'll speak it very differently.
Yes.
And I think Phil Tunes is a different styles is okay. A lot of that. It's essentially the same, this very very similar style, but there's different accents, and you can hear that in the way they play.
Right. Just like language.
Whether if it's in the bow technique or in the ornamentation.
Right. Is there ornamentation and trills in classical music too?
Oh yes. Yeah? Yeah, there's a lot of it. Yeah. Yeah.
So what's more difficult to play, classical or fiddle tunes?
Well, like, if you take the pure technicality of it, classical violin pieces are going to be more difficult. And there's a lot of classical pieces I can't play. I would have to work extremely hard for years to be able to play them. Where like fiddle tunes, but essentially because if it's the music of the people, it doesn't require academic training
or tactical expertise.
Like people often pick up the fiddle and kind of like learn by ear.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it wonderful, is because it's got maybe some little, this little, what you would call as a classical player, imperfections, but that become
right.
part of the style, and that become very endearing. And that can also, in a way, be hard to reproduce. Like often I hear classical players playing fiddle tunes, I don't think they play it right because it's too pretty. It's like everything is very pretty, very in tune, but it's like, well, now it sounds like a.
There's no no passion in it, no
yeah.
folksiness.
Well, yeah, you have to try to be true to the style, you need some roughness.
Okay.
In fiddle music, you need. And sometimes some notes have to be out of tune, slightly, and that's gonna make it.
Because that's the expression of the music,
Exactly, yeah. And so, it's a very fine line to strike, so that's why I like to call myself a fiddler or a violinist, because I have a classical training.
Yes.
But I when I play a fiddle tune, I try as much as I can, and maybe I should try harder. But to play fiddle, to play rough to a certain extent, to have those little accents that try to be as true as possible to the music, to the style.
Yeah, you're certainly no slouch when it comes to playing classical music either. You're no slouch. You're pretty good at playing classical violin as well.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And if you'll indulge me, I'd like to play your classical demo that I grabbed off SoundCloud. So you can just compare the fiddle music we heard a few minutes ago with classical violin playing. So, classical demo by Jeremy Genoux.
And there's a classical demo by Jeremy Genoux, violin player.
So actually, that's very interesting here. The first, well, two pieces in that mashup were pieces by Bach for solo violin, so the Gavotte Rondo, and I think there was a jig. And those are, I often like to play those back to back with fiddle tunes, because they actually got a lot of in common, even if they're classical violin pieces. First of all, because they're dances, they're meant to be danced, just like a fiddle tune generally is, and even if it's got maybe a little bit more technical aspects, it's a little bit more complex harmony. It's got that. That folky drive, I find, I often play them more like fiddle tunes, almost like kind of like halfway, just a little rougher than what you would play a violin piece.
Does that happen? Does classical music get repurposed by the common man to become fiddle music?
Oh yeah, I'm sure it does. I can't think of any other example right now, but there's a lot of music styles are not like closed off boxes as much as maybe some people like them to think that way. I think it's a whole spectrum of styles, and so there's a lot of things in between those genres.
So there's no hard divide then, really, between violin playing and fiddle playing. Violin music and fiddle music is a spectrum of.
I think so. Like, I mean, okay. And a purely jazz violin would be a little bit, in between. Like, there's jazz violin, jazz fiddle. It's often going to be more technical, and more. Yeah, it's going to be a little bit more technical usually than fiddle music, but it's also got a little bit of roughness. Like you're going to get some bends and some twangs, and you know, when you play jazz, you play a little bit of blues, and
yeah,
blues is definitely closer to folk music than it is from classical music. So when you play jazz violin. It's often jazz fiddle. It's pretty where the two terms really come together.
Right. And speaking of jazz violin, you've got an upcoming jazz concert.
That's right. Yes, November 4th, and it's live in Calgary with a very limited sitting, obviously, but it's also streaming live. It's going to be late for Ontario. It's going to be 10 p.m. But if you're up to it, you can stream it live.
Okay. So I'm looking at your Facebook post with the poster: Jeremy Genoux, Keith Roger, Wayne Garrett. But I'm afraid I don't see a link to the event.
I'll find that and
stick it on the show notes page, which will be at radiowaterloo.ca/ccc. And that's where you can find all your contact information. Tell me about your contact information. Where can people find you online? People need to look up Jeremy Genoux?
Yeah, you can look me up, and you should find there's plenty of ways to hear my music or to find information. There's all the social media: Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Instagram is probably the one I use the most, but I try to also post on Facebook too. There's my website, jeremygenoumusician.com, and my Bandcamp, where you can listen to my album and purchase it if you like it.
Yes.
You can also stream on all the platforms: Spotify, Deezer, Apple Music, other ones I don't even know about.
I'll find the ones I can find and link them on the show notes page.
Yes, and I can send some more links to you. I have the Spotify and Apple Music definitely somewhere. All of this is available. I think plenty of ways, and there, you made me remember that also SoundCloud. Although the album is not on SoundCloud, but there's other things that I forgot about.
Once it's on the internet, you know, it's there forever.
Yes, that's a good reminder of that golden rule.
Yeah, going to let you take us out to the top of the hour. This is Climate Rag, Jeremy Genoux. Thank you ever so much for joining us today. It has been a great day.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed speaking with you. Thank you so much.
You'll have to come back, because I don't think we're done yet. Jeremy Genoux,
fiddle player, violinist. This is Climate Rag taking us out. CKMS Community Connections is produced by Radio Waterloo, sponsored by Radio Waterloo. Executive producer is Jennifer Strong. My name is Bob Jonkman. Associate producers are James Jordan, who you'll hear again Saturday on CKMS Community Connections, Saturday at noon.